Hi, everybody. We are on Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 39, and we're getting quite close to completing the introduction. We have been dealing with a very intricate matter, and it has. I've been focusing on pages 84 and 85. I had a little mishap with number 37, which was then truncated at 30 minutes, and then I continued with number 38, enlarging on the subject, a very amazing subject, really, concerning the three great constellations, seven sources from the Great Bear, two sources from Sirius, and three sources from the Pleiades, and how these sources, or probably stars, condition the 12 zodiacal constellations and the 12 planets, and whether or not these stellar sources are blinds for still greater sources. That is a question that I've explored quite thoroughly in number 38. So now we're on page 85 and we're ready to move forward. DK is telling us that always the emphasis must be laid upon the rays of energy and quality as they pour through the zodiacal constellations and planets. Remember, he so often interchanges the words constellations and signs, seemingly without special purpose, but who knows? So we have to study carefully. Sometimes in the very same sentence, the words signs and constellations meaning the same are meant to mean the same thing, so it seems. The new astrology, therefore, is necessarily based upon an understanding of the rays. The rays are always preeminent, and the book Esoteric Astrology is part of A Treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 3. The following tabulation is fundamental in its implications in this connection, and upon it all that I have to say will be based. So, the seven stars, let's see, is it coming up? Yeah, tabulation is coming up. Okay. It's tabulation 8. Seven stars of the Great Bear are the originating sources of the seven rays of our solar system. I think we have to take that at face value. They are very great beings, very great lords of stellar, lords of stars. They are embodied by the seven rishis. The seven rishis are the lords of these stars. The seven rishis, as they are called, of the Great Bear, express themselves through the medium of the seven planetary logoi who are their representatives and to whom they stand in the relation of prototype. So we might say that towards the kind of entity that they are, the planetary logoi strive. And they model themselves after the seven rishis of the Great Bear. And I think we have to look for, initially, seven sacred planetary logoi, and perhaps the non-sacred logoi are also associated with the same star as the sacred logos of their ray. For instance, if we look at Neptune and say that it may be associated with one of the seven rishis, maybe the star Merik, sixth ray star, then perhaps the star Mars, temporarily on the sixth ray, the planet Mars, temporarily on the sixth ray, is also associated with that star. As I explained in the foregoing discussion in number 38, much depends on which ray of the planet we may be talking about, either the soul ray or the monadic ray. We're not in a position to decide that. And also, much depends upon the rays of the rishis themselves. It probably can't be only one ray, but we're certainly in no position to determine additional rays of the rishis of the Great Bear. We are given simply seven rays, and we have to work with that. The seven planetary spirits, which is equivalent to Logoi, manifests through the medium of the seven sacred planets. So indeed we are talking about the relationship of the sacred planets to the rishis, which are prototypes of these sacred planets. Well, the seven stars are sources of the seven rays, I think especially from the will aspect. It may be that the seven sisters are sources of the seven rays from the intelligence or activity aspect. And I'm speculating to think that the seven stars of the Little Dipper, or Ursa Minor, are sources of the seven rays from the soul aspect. Sometimes we might think it would be Sirius, but I do think that a higher counterpart of the of Sirius will be the seven stars of the Little Bear. Now, how it is that one particular star can work through a number of constellations, what is the relative magnitude of a star in the Great Bear and a constellation, the many stars in a constellation, that really needs to be discussed, or at least thought about. From another perspective, if it is correct that the seven stars of the Great Bear convey the rays from the will aspect, and that perhaps the Little Bear and the Pleiades are involved in conveying rays from the other aspect, we might wonder then whether three streams of energy, say for the first ray, you know, the first ray star in the Great Bear, the first ray star in Ursa Minor, the Little Bear, the first ray star in the Pleiades, probably Alcyone, whether those three sources pour through a particular constellation or a group of constellations and thus condition them. There is some blind, I think, operating here, because we have some, in the Great Bear, some stars of moderate intensity, and sometimes they are said to control constellational lords that would be of still greater intensity and power. In other words, here's the question. How can a lord of a solar system, or the lord of a star, control the lord of a constellation? That is a question that I think has to be answered, and that's why I think sometimes there are blinds where a star, what appears to be a star, stands for an entire constellation. Just like, for instance, Betelgeuse or Betelgeuse, however you want to pronounce it, can stand for the entire constellation Orion. And Sirius can stand for itself, but it can also stand for a larger solar system, a system of stars. It can stand for a cosmic logos of much greater scope. And so it goes. These will have to be sorted out as we go. I don't think we're in any position at the moment to say anything definitive about the setup, as DK calls it, that unconventional word, setup. But as I said, you know, can Logoi of stars control Logoi of constellations? I guess it just depends on their relative power. You know, the logos of a star like Antares, which is an incredible supergiant, might well be able to control the logos of a lesser constellation. Each of these seven rays coming from the Great Bear is transmitted into our solar system through the medium of three constellations, through the medium of. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that the power of the star controls the constellation through which it is transmitted. It's just that the constellations are conduits for the rays, and the source of the rays are as given, the seven stars in the Great Bear, and perhaps some larger ray constellation behind the seven stars in the Great Bear. Ray constellations behind each one of them. For instance, Al-Kaid or Benetnash, the first ray star in the Great Bear, might have behind it the entire Great Bear constellation as the real source of the first ray. And so it goes with all the others. If we can find a particular great constellation behind one of, behind and supporting each of the stars in the Great Bear, then from the point of scope or magnitude, at least to me, it would make more sense. Okay, so each of the seven rays coming from the Great Bear is transmitted into our solar system through the medium of three constellations and their ruling planets. So the ray passes through the constellation, regardless of what its rays may be, because it can have other rays as well, and passes through the ruling planets on three levels, but especially on two levels, which are orthodox and esoteric, regardless of what the rays of the planets might be. So that's very interesting. For instance, and we'll see in a minute, if Mercury esoterically rules Aries, the first ray of the Great Bear and the first ray of Aries continue to pass through fourth ray, third ray, fifth ray Mercury. Mercury, regardless of its rays, becomes a transmitter, not an emitter so much, but a transmitter of the first ray. The following tabulation makes this clear, but must be interpreted only in terms of this present turn of the great zodiacal wheel. Now, this is a period, probably, which is a lesser period to a world period, which we already discussed as possibly being equal to a lesser round, a greater round, or even a Mahakalpa. Anyway, the great zodiacal wheel called the Platonic year of 25,000 years. Okay. So here is tabulation number 8, and it's a tabulation on which I have spent a great deal of time in esoteric astrology classes. The three first-ray constellations, we assume that here we have the ray of will or power coming from the star called Benetnash, or an alternative name, Al-Kaid. It goes through three constellations in which the first ray is considered prominent. Now, in other words, we may not only be dealing with a ray passing through constellations. We may be dealing with constellations which are themselves emitting this ray, and therefore an affinity is set up between the ray from the Great Bear and the constellation itself. In other words, this is to say that there are first ray aspects in Aries, Leo, and Capricorn, which attune to the first ray from the Great Bear. Aries, the ram, is in fact the most powerful transmitter of the first ray, so it's the major transmitter of the first ray at this time, though Leo and Capricorn both have aspects. Aries is the type of will. It's called the will to create. Leo, the will to fulfill. Capricorn, the will which conquers death. All three of them emphasize the will strongly. Aries is ruled by Mars for its assertiveness and fighting spirit, and Mercury as the birthplace of ideas, with Aries ruling the head. I think, you know, one, I should only speak briefly of these matters. It's possible to enlarge quite a bit. Leo is ruled by the Sun, which in the orthodox position may well be a veil for Jupiter, because Jupiter and the Sun have a very close relation, and the Sun is considered the eye of Jupiter mythologically, and the Sun veiling Neptune in its esoteric mode. We're not talking here about the hierarchical rulers, although they will, I think, be important. Capricorn is ruled by Saturn, both orthodoxly and esoterically, so the difficulties of life on Earth and the necessity to learn about the law and follow the law and be punished if one breaks the law through karma, be punished through karma if one breaks the law. This is the initial Saturn, and the later Saturn has to do with attunement with the divine plan, which emanates in a way from the atmic plane over which Saturn rules. So the first ray, regardless of the rays of these planets, initially Mars 6, Sun 2, Saturn 3, the first ray is passing through each of these planets, and it started with the Great Bear and passed through the constellations, which probably have a good measure of first ray in them. The Great Bear first ray augmenting the first ray found within these constellations, and then passing through planets, two of which do probably have a first ray component. Mars, perhaps a first ray soul, or a first ray, finally a first ray monad, just like the Earth, perhaps, and Saturn, a first ray. Some say personality, some have speculated soul. Saturn has a powerful first ray connected with it, thus is resonant with the ray coming, first ray coming from the Great Bear. When we go to the second ray, which may be considered emanating from the star Mizar, M-I-Z-A-R, we have three constellations. Gemini itself shaped like a two, very resonant. Virgo, the major constellation through which the second ray passes, and Pisces, perhaps still more major in the sense that Pisces is one of three cosmic decanates, each of which is associated with one of the rays of aspect, and Pisces especially with the second ray and with the Christ. Virgo, however, is considered practically to be the main sign to which the second ray comes, but ultimately Pisces may be more powerful. And we are assuming then that within the lords of these constellations is a strong second ray component, which will make it resonant to the second ray coming from the second star of the Great Bear, Mizar. Mercury and Jupiter are the orthodox rulers, and Venus, the Moon, and Pluto are respectively the esoteric rulers. Mercury, Venus, Mercury in relation to Gemini giving facile intelligence and much mobility. Venus esoterically giving the magnetism which can draw the pairs of opposites together and bring them into a kind of union in which the factor of unity is preserved. When we look at Virgo, we have Mercury, the acute intelligence in matter, a very material mind, but we have the Moon, and it says veiling a planet. I don't know whether DK had given the planet veiled here, but it is Vulcan, and later he discusses that. But it's not Vulcan alone, it's also Neptune. Jupiter is the initial ruler of Pisces, and Pluto, the esoteric and also hierarchical ruler. The moon veiling Vulcan shows how much Virgo is involved esoterically in the formative power, the building of forms which can embody high spiritual principles. Jupiter confers a general benevolence and a general will to participate in all that can be responded to sensitively. The Pisces person so often feels engulfed by circumstances. And Jupiter is not only a planet of benevolence and opportunity and expansion, it is a planet of being engulfed and overwhelmed. But eventually Pisces has to learn the lesson of detachment, to which Pluto contributes its ray of death. This is emerging in the life of the disciple, when he is responding to the higher energies and is trying to detach himself from his conscious and unconscious preoccupations. And we would want to include the hierarchical rulers, but in another chart we will do so. The third ray of active intelligence is also here, and it's operating through three signs in which we presume, or three constellations, that the third ray is active. Cancer bringing in at least the third and seventh ray are transmitted through it. Libra, the third ray is transmitted, and Capricorn, the first, third, and seventh ray are transmitted. The orthodox ruler of the Cancer is the moon, indicating the mass consciousness and the lunar nature in all of its blindness, but Neptune esoterically brings in increasing sensitivity, which allows the Cancer native to transcend the imprisonment in the lunar vehicles and become sensitive to fields of energy which are far beyond the lunar vehicles. Cancer is the main conduit of the third ray for the average individual, just like Capricorn is the main conduit for the third ray for disciples. Libra, the sense of equilibrium, the balance, the sign of karma, the adjustments which have to occur. And the mathematically manipulative and skillful third ray, extremely intelligent, helping to make those adjustments. The third ray is one of the major means promoting the mathematics necessary to the lords of karma in order to make their adjustments. Venus is the exoteric ruler, the orthodox ruler, and uniting the pairs of opposites both horizontally and vertically. It's the power of attraction which makes relationship desirable and possible. Uranus, however, is the esoteric ruler related to Libra. It has to do with a different use of the sacral center altogether, and with relationships defined on the basis of authenticity and not merely on pleasantness and attraction. We have two authentic beings seeking to come into relationship for mutual enhancement, and they will not compromise their true nature, their authenticity, symbolized by Uranus. For Capricorn, the goat, we have the same principle operative. Only here we have intelligent activity in the world. That's the first Capricorn. And later, under the second Capricorn, we have intelligent activity in the carrying forth of the divine plan. Now, you know, I think we realize there's so much that can be said about these particular positions, but we are giving them just kind of an initial exposure. And I'm sure you are aware of many of these meanings. All the three synthesizing planets we see are active in relation to the third ray when we are considering the third ray, when we are considering the soul level. When we reach the fourth ray, we have constellations, Taurus, Scorpio, and Sagittarius, which are transmitters. The major constellation through which the fourth ray is transmitted and perhaps emitted is Scorpio, the Scorpion, at least at this time. The fourth ray is the only ray given coming through Taurus, the Bull. It's the only ray, you know, with its great love of beauty. I probably should have said regarding the other constellations why this particular ray passing through it is suitable. But the great love of beauty through the eye and through the ear makes Taurus, or aligns Taurus with the fourth ray. Scorpio suggests the ray of struggle. It suggests the constant battle and crisis in which the Scorpio person finds himself, or which the energy of Scorpio promotes. Sagittarius actually has three rays coming through it, the fourth, fifth, and sixth. Fourth is not the major ray coming through Sagittarius. Fourth is the major ray coming through Scorpio. With respect to Taurus, the Bull, the average planet orthodox is Venus. Taurus loving all things which are pleasant, comfortable, attractive, beautiful. Of course, that's only one side of it. There is a will side here as well, involving Vulcan. And for the disciple and also for the initiate, Vulcan gives that power in Taurus to persist and to race forward towards the goal once Vulcan gets started. Yes, Vulcan is connected ultimately with the heart of the sun and Taurus with the blinding light. So under this combination of energies, we seem to have the power to enter the light and to fuse it with love. We have a double Mars as the rulers of Scorpion. It is Scorpio. It's a sign of great battle and struggle, a sign of great difficulty, but of possible triumph. So the warfare of the exoteric Mars can be quite bloody and unconscionable and simply aggressive, driven by desire. But the Mars of which rules Scorpio exoterically can have high principles, nobility, courage, valor, ability to stand and fight for one's principles. With Sagittarius the archer, the fourth ray has to do with the great human experiment. It has to do with the eternal quest, Sagittarius, of the fourth ray type. It also has to do with the fact that the fourth kingdom of nature was created through the good offices of Sagittarius coming in touch with the angelic evolution related to Gemini. Jupiter gives the general attitude of expansive quest and exploration to the Sagittarian. And Earth speaks of the necessity to treat the Earth as a living being, a living animal in a way, and to help the earth tread its particular path. Okay. Sagittarius is ever the seeker, and the human being is the sensitive seeker as well. There would be no humanity without animal man, represented by Sagittarius, coming in touch with the Geminian solar angelic evolution. Jupiter is needed to expand the search, to widen the horizon. And finally, what we're looking for is the beauty, fourth ray beauty, of the earth itself, and the need to celebrate that beauty of a planet on its way to sacredness. I sometimes think of Sagittarius in terms of the National Geographic consciousness. Go somewhere, see the extraordinary beauty of the planet, and get it in images, bring it back, have people celebrate it as well. When it comes to the fifth ray, well, let's see, maybe I should list them, perhaps I did. Third ray comes through Alioth, according to present hypothesis. Fourth ray through Megrez, which is the star which links to the handle of the Dipper. And the fifth ray is Dubay, which is the pointer closest to Polaris. It's working through three constellations in which the fifth ray can be understood as prominent. Leo the Lion, which draws the ring past knot of that which is the self and that which is not. The fifth ray draws that discriminating line between the self and the not self. It helps one know what is the self and what is not the self. Sagittarius is the spirit of exploration, so often found in the fifth ray, that will undertake various adventures in order to discover. They share the urge for discovery. When it comes to Aquarius, we're dealing with a technical fifth-ray knowledge of all kinds of subtle energies, and the beneficence of that knowledge poured forth upon the human race so that its condition can be improved by science. Now, you know, I think we have to say that at this time at least, or in this world period, or perhaps during this turn of the great Platonic wheel, which is a shorter period of time, these constellations are the recipients of a particular type of ray energy. But we know that even on the Earth, all the rays are found in quite strength. So we have to suspect that on all planets, all the rays are found, though some are prominent. And with respect to the lords of all the 12 constellations, all rays will be found within them, though some more prominent at a certain time, and perhaps more stably prominent, just the way our sun has quite a stable second ray, even though it has many other rays within it, all the other rays as expressed with the various planetary logoi. So even, as I say, the stars of the Great Bear likely have more than one ray, the lords or rishis. Why should they be any different than every other being in cosmos, which is a trinity and has at least three major rays? We don't know how far these rishis have evolved, however, so we don't know, as I said before, which ray we are dealing with. Leo, in relation to the fifth ray, is ruled by the sun. That's the idea of bringing illumination and shedding light on many subjects, which the fifth ray can do, and that is shared with the illuminative power of the sun. The sun is the veil of Neptune in its second place, And there is here a story of the solar angels. The Sun, Neptune, and Venus are all connected. It's the heart of the Sun, Neptune, and Venus, which are relating to the solar angels or their higher prototypes. And the solar angels are particularly qualified by the second ray, but also the fifth ray of Manus. So on the higher mental plane, a fifth ray, second ray center is formed, and it is a luminous, radiant, sun-like center, which is fed by the power of Buddhi, which the Sun veils. When it comes to Sagittarius, Jupiter, the planet of expansion, to expand the range of exploration and study for the sake of the fifth ray. When it comes to the Earth as the ruler of Sagittarius, our major study at this time in the fifth ray sense is that which can be found upon the Earth. We are studying the Earth and its environment, its subtle environment as well. Of course, when you get the fifth ray and Sagittarius together, you've got the telescope, don't you? I mean, people like to look out into space and, using the fifth ray, discover something about those far-distant sources. You know, they know about speeds and rotations and spectral colors and movements. The Sagittarius is that telescope. And the fifth ray is the attitude we use as we meticulously study what the telescope reveals. And from another perspective, it's the microscope. You know, it's a long way from the scale that we find ourselves expressing within to the tiniest unit that is apparent within the microscope. It's quite a journey down there. And that's all part of the Earth as well. The planet Uranus is the ruler of concrete science and occult science. In the sense that it rules concrete science, it shares a position with Mars. But Uranus tends to make the investigation more subtle and less crude. Mars deals with the science of the obvious. So, you know, Mars had... I may be experiencing a little difficulty here. Okay, hopefully not. We will see. This happens regardless of what I do. It has to do with GoToWebinar itself. All right. Mars rules the outer type of science, and when we look at the way physics was pursued, it was pursued through the five senses. But when the five senses were greatly extended through instrumentation, then Uranus had more to do with it. The greater technical expertise dealing with hidden factors, Uranus was there. So Uranus is a scientific planet, and it allows for the scientific improvements which Aquarius will bring, because Aquarius is very strongly related to the fifth ray. I mean, when we look at these constellations, zodiacal constellations, we have to say, do they contain within their monad, soul, or personality the ray in question? To me, it makes sense as a hypothesis that they would contain that, and that that is the reason for the resonance between them and the ray of the Rishi concerned. But of course, yeah, there's so much to say here. The fifth ray is passing through the Sun, which has no fifth ray per se, except the Sun does, because it contains all the rays. It's passing through Jupiter, not a fifth ray planet. It's passing through the Earth, not a fifth ray planet. Uranus has, in relation to it, much fifth ray, but as stated, Jupiter does not. The same goes for these other planets. The fourth ray is passing through Venus. Well, we might think it has some of the harmony. Vulcan definitely does. The fourth ray passes through Mars. Does Mars have fourth ray? Well, it certainly has conflict, but it doesn't seem to have the will to resolve the conflict. And as we know, the sixth ray can get itself in many conflicted situations. So we don't only need to look to the fourth ray to find conflict. The fourth ray passes through Jupiter. Well, sometimes the glyph of Jupiter looks like the number four, and there are fourfold force units connected with Jupiter, but it does not seem to be one of its prominent rays. The fourth ray passes through the Earth. Probably in one of the lower vehicles of Earth, the fourth ray can be found, and it is the fourth major planet from the Sun. I realized that I hadn't done this part of the analysis. The third ray passing through the Moon. Yes, the Moon is the symbol of third ray matter. Passing through Neptune. Well, Neptune is considered the god of reasoning, but probably that's pure reason. But Neptune has a trident, and the trident is a threefold structure. So Neptune is also connected with the ocean of matter, which connects it with the material third ray. Active intelligence of the third ray passes through Venus. Well, sometimes Venus is connected with the throat center and is sometimes considered a kind of monastic permanent atom. It may find itself in the role of a monastic permanent atom with Earth as the mental unit. So then that's a ray 3 position with Earth in a ray 5 position, interestingly. But normally the activity of Venus is not an especially third ray activity. I can't find any third ray in its vehicles, though when linked with Saturn and Jupiter, Saturn will represent the first aspect, Jupiter the second, and Venus the third. Active intelligence through Uranus, yes, one of the rays of Uranus can well be the third ray. It is certainly a planet of mobility, constant movement of migration, and so forth. Usually a change of scene, a change of place, is correlated with Uranus. The third ray through Saturn, yes, it's a third ray monad, and perhaps the third ray also appears in other of its vehicles. Did I take the second ray through Mercury? Well, the fusion which Mercury gives segues into the second ray, but it's not per se a second ray planet, far too mobile. The second ray passing through Venus, yes, Venus probably has a second ray personality, may well have it, and certainly a major second ray monad, though it's submonadic ray I hypothesize as the sixth, and DK virtually says so. A love wisdom second ray passing through the Moon? Not really. But the Moon is veiling Vulcan, and Vulcan is connected with the heart of the Sun, ultimately. The fourth ray in the heart of the Sun, and Vulcan is, the Moon is veiling also Neptune, which is one of the reasons that the Christ, individual Christ, can be born in Virgo, so Neptune is a second ray monad. The second ray, of course, passes through Jupiter, yes. But Pluto has none of it, and so how interesting that love, wisdom will be served by this planet Pluto as it passes through that planet to reach us. So regardless of the destructions which may have occurred, the second ray is lying behind it, and as well as the second ray of Pisces. So Pluto, though a dark and dread planet, bringing death and separation and detachment and the cutting process, does it all, I think, for a second ray purpose, or at least is used in that way. I think I talked about, did I talk about the first ray coming through Mars? Yes, it may have a first ray soul. First ray through Mercury? No. But still, it is past. First ray through the Sun? Not really, except that the Sun holds a dominating first ray position in our solar system. First ray through Saturn? Yes. Saturn, the first ray being either the personality ray or some consider it to be the soul ray. So now I've caught up on that. It's easy to leave things out, unfortunately. The idealism and devotion of the sixth ray coming through the star Merak, which is one of the bottom stars of the Dipper. Virgo has that great devotion The child, and to the child in the womb, and that long-lasting persistence of the sixth ray. Sagittarius has the vision of the goal and the idealism to reach that goal. So it is one of the most idealistic signs, and it idealizes what it envisions. There is much sixth ray, eventually at the Ajna Center, and Sagittarius is found at the Ajna Center to opening up the vision. Pisces, yes, I leave my father's home and turning back I save. The devotion to the act of saving and that great devotion of a lord of ceaseless and persevering devotion who went forth into the five lower worlds, dedicated, devoted to save the lower lives. So the sixth ray is found in each as a probable ray in the equipment of each of these zodiacal lords. Mercury orthodoxly gives the intelligence in matter and perhaps a dedication to the improvement and refinement, purification of matter done in skillful means. The moon is here found, and I think as the esoteric ruler, but it particularly veils Neptune. Neptune has to do with that perfectionism and idealism found in the sixth ray and also found in Virgo. I will say that although the moon veils Vulcan in Virgo, I would say, yeah, in terms of perfecting the form, Vulcan will be found. The persistence to shape and mold and perfect the form according to a high ideal. When it comes to Neptune, the idealism is more the devotion to the Christ principle. Can the sixth ray find any component in Mercury? Not really. Mercury is that intelligent sign which usually debunks some of the far-fetched ideas that idealists have. Can the moon be found displaying the sixth ray? Well, the moon is the mother, and the mother has the devotion to the form, probably in what the moon was as the lord of the third chain. There was not much sixth ray, except that the number three, its chain number, is related to the number six. You know, DK says, do take two ones and make them two and find the relation of the first and second ray. Do take two twos and make them four and find the relation between the second and fourth ray. Do take two threes and make them six and find the relation between the third ray and the sixth ray. This Jupiter is a very idealistic planet. It has an up and optimistic attitude. It pursues the vision. Jupiter envisions. Sometimes I've even thought that the personality ray, not much discussed in relation to the sacred planets, for Jupiter could even be the sixth ray personality. Six or seven, it probably is. And the Earth, well, is there sixth ray in relation to Earth? Well, we have an astral condition on the Earth, which is not resolved, and we have probably quite a devoted astral body for the planetary logos. And maybe this is somehow expressed through Sanat Kumara's great devotion to salvation. He is the highest example of the teaching force and also probably of the saving force upon our planet. And the monads carry that are directed by him and are a part of him carry that devotion to making the Earth a sacred planet. So it is possible to consider the sixth ray in relation to Earth, but not one of the major rays, which are 1, 2, and 3. So yes, there is a way for the sixth ray to pass conveniently through or resonantly through these two planets. When we deal with Jupiter, it is the general benevolence of the helpful Pisces, and when we deal with Pluto, it is bringing about the needed detachment so that the next cycle in Aries can begin. Can the sixth ray pass through Jupiter? Yes, we've already said so. It has that up, idealistic, visionary, I can reach the goal, can do, confident attitude. What about Pluto? Well, we've read that Pluto is connected with the solar plexus, which is ruled by the sixth ray. And there is some kind of incredible fanaticism involved with Pluto that is more than just the first ray. I sometimes consider it a first ray, sixth ray planet. Whereas Mars is a sixth ray personality, possibly with a first ray soul, I do wonder whether Pluto is a first ray personality, possibly with a sixth ray soul. We know that that Hades is really found by entering through the solar plexus. It's somewhat the astral plane. And Pluto allows us to go down into the depths of the solar plexus. Yes, we're going to have time. Ceremonial order, the great seventh ray, coming through the star Phaedra and perhaps whatever other greater constellation may represent, it may represent, because, you know, yes, as far as our solar system is concerned, these rays come from the Great Bear, the seven stars. But if you think more deeply about it, septenates are universal, and there have to be even great galaxies ruled by the seventh of the septenates. Would they be called rays at that high level? Well, ray is a good term, at least for us. But the seven great beings who stand before the ultimate throne of the universal logos display the seven qualities of divinity, and many great clusters of galaxies and, you know, superordinate kinds of structures will display one or other of these septenary rays. So there are definitely great constellations and structures behind each one of the seven rays. As a matter of fact, you know, if you go to page 1084, 1085 of Cosmic Fire, we're going to find out that the masters can somehow gauge and they somehow know the energy quality of galaxies. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of the great energies pouring through space are coming from galaxies that are attuned to a particular ray. Even the arms of galaxies probably have a connection with the fundamental septenates. Well, Aries, the ram, loves regimentation and marching and simultaneous coherent order, you know, a perfect form in action with a somewhat militant energy within it. As for Cancer, it gives us the form on the seventh plane. It gives us the dense physical form, and ceremonial order is particularly related to the dense physical vehicle. As for Capricorn, it is the sign through which the greatest amount of the seventh ray comes. Sagittarius, most of the sixth ray, as I said. Aquarius coming, most of the fifth ray, but Leo presently. Scorpio, most of the fourth ray. Cancer for the mass, most of the third. Capricorn for the disciples, most of the third. Virgo, most of the second, but Pisces very strong. And Aries, most of the first ray. So Capricorn is that lawful, perfect structure, that perfection of form and of relationship in form. It is the great embodiment of the divine idea in perfectly structured relationship upon the physical plane. Capricorn, the unicorn is the unicorn because the kundalini has risen. The horn of the unicorn is a spiral, and that can be allied somewhat to the spiraling action of the rising kundalini. So the seventh ray can make the goat through the rising of the kundalini from the seventh center downward in response to the call of the first ray of purpose from the head center and even from the directing power of the first ray at the ajna center. Well, you know, the conflict of Aries the ram always getting into fights, fighting for life, fighting for survival. But, you know, we have to consider this not from the first ray perspective, but from the seventh ray that passes through it. Mars doesn't have much of the seventh ray, although every planet has every ray to a degree, but there's a degree of militancy which goes along with the order, and the military and the militant groups often have order very strongly connected with them. When it comes to the seventh ray and Mercury, not really, except that the birthplace of divine ideas will touch the archetypes which must descend onto the physical plane and be embodied in perfect archetypal order within the world of becoming, even as they are in the world of being. So that Mercury passes through this, passes the seventh ray through it, brings ideas about how this perfection of form upon the physical plane can be accomplished. The seventh ray passing through the moon, well, the moon is the symbol of all ritual and all cycle. This concerns itself with the third ray as well as with the seventh. The moon is the mother of the form. The moon embodies the higher energies. The different phases of the moon, we operate ritualistically with respect to the moon, even in our breathing exercises, in our approach to the full moon, and in our succeeding expression following the full moon. All is ritualized according to the moon. Seventh ray is very connected. Even the color violet, the moon is associated along with Cancer with the color violet, and that's the color of the seventh ray of ceremonial order. What about the seventh ray and Neptune? Well, not really, except an interesting thing here, that when we look at Neptune as veiling the Christ, it is a planet whose desire moves towards manifestation on the cosmic physical plane. And there is, you know, I'm always losing that reference, but, oh, is it page 300? I'm just going to take a wild shot here, a wild shot in esoteric astrology, whether it's page 300 or not. But there is, if it isn't, it's, well, it's near page 300, where Neptune is associated with the base of the spine center. Certainly, well, there it is, isn't it? It's page 301. The Sun with the head center, the Uranus with the heart center, and Neptune with the base of the spine center. Now, to try to explain that has to do with the relationship of desire to manifestation. Central Sun, heart of the Sun, physical Sun. Normally we would consider Neptune related to the heart of the Sun. Indeed it is. But in this particular tabulation, which relates to a later degree, the awakening of the seventh center, the center of the base of the spine, by the soul working through the first or highest head center and producing as a consequence the surging upward of kundalini fire. That's a late degree of evolution. This in turn produces a fusion with the higher forces. When this takes place, the three major centers in the body are the head, the heart, the base of the spine. This is found in political work. And central spiritual sun. This is a very profound chart. I'll have to really go over that. Hopefully by the time we get there, I'll know what I'm talking about. The heart of the sun, Mercury and Uranus. The base of the spine, I can see Saturn ruling the lowest center. And Neptune, interestingly, it is a planet of rising power. It doesn't have a lot of roots, although associated with the root chakra is interesting. Perhaps some of the elevation of the energy found in the root chakra is correlated with Neptune. Well, okay, so the seventh ray is just what Neptune does not have, and just what Neptune needs. But the whole idea that if you have a strong enough desire or wish, it can manifest, unites the sixth and seventh ray. In ceremonial order, Saturn rules the entire cosmic physical plane, which is the seventh cosmic plane. It rules the entire etheric physical plane, generically. That is the seventh plane, although it rules most of all the dense level of the systemic physical plane. But Saturn certainly has a lot to do with the seventh ray, so as it passes through, we can see the resonance there. I've sometimes thought that the personality ray of Saturn could be the seventh. Some people have said one. Well, you know, does Saturn have two third rays? That's the big question. It certainly has a third ray monad. One way of looking at it is a third ray monad, third ray soul, first ray personality. Another way of looking at it is a third ray monad, first ray soul, seventh ray personality. Certainly in all matters of organization, Saturn is supreme. All right, well, we have gone hastily through this magnificent chart, and when we add the hierarchical rulers to it, it will become even more interesting. But my purpose here is to talk about how a ray from the Great Bear, from a star in the Great Bear, perhaps backed up by some huge constellation, can pass through three particular constellations through which it is attuned, with its power being transmitted through those constellations, probably because the constellations have a resonant ray, maybe the same ray. That same ray passing through a number of planets, many of which do not have resonance with the ray they are conveying. I mean, every time you look at Mercury and you say, my God, it's conveying the power of the first ray. How does it do that? Well, let's just say, it's the mind, and you have to obey the mind, and the mind is the director. We can probably find ways in which we can correlate the ray passing through these planets, which are the rulers of the constellations, even though those planets don't have the ray that is passing through them, and thus are not resonant in that manner. Well, I'm sure we're at the end now. We are really at the end. 1 minute, 1 hour and 1 minute. So let us sound the great invocation together. When the number 68 comes up, I know I'm right. And we are getting very near the end of the introduction. I can see Aries coming up in just a few paragraphs. So that'll be 40 or 41 webinars that are on this wonderful introduction, which has such profound ideas that so many of them are difficult to grasp, but we need to try to grasp things in the large way in order to understand the outlines of esoteric astrology. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men, may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we have reached page 86. Okay, this is number 39. EAA 39, ending on page on page 86, and starting, that's 96, 86, and starting, I believe, on page 85, 84, 85. We haven't really covered too much ground, but there's some pretty profound charts here that we have to deal with. Okay, so we will say farewell now, and we will take this up at the next time. That may be a while before I can do much again, but we have plenty going for ourselves, don't we? Okay, see you then. Bye-bye.